ESPN College Football Podcast.
Oh, it's my favorite day of the week. It is the Monday edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, Matt Berry alongside. Before we get started, two things I want to mention. Listen to ESPN's newest podcast, Swagoo and Perk. It's led by NFL veteran analyst Marcus Spears, a.k.a. Swagoo, and NBA champion and analyst Kendrick Perkins. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Swagoo and Perk are going to touch on the NFL, NBA news, their lives and journeys. Again, Swagoo and Perk, wherever you get your podcast. And finally, today, watch NBA Today on ESPN, Monday through Friday, 3 Eastern, New Pacific. Malika Andrews is at the helm. She's joined by ESPN's full cast of NBA experts, insiders, reporters, and more. Got the bullet points out of the way, getting into college football week 8, plus why we love the sport. It is going to be fun to do this today. Kirk, happy Monday. And before we get into all of the happenings in week 8, I saw something, and I'm hoping you'll tell us a couple of stories about it. I saw that you lost your high school head coach. And here's what I want to do with this, because I find that coaches mean so much to people, and we get so caught up in the other stuff with coaches and buyouts and this, that. If you wouldn't mind, why did this man mean so much to you?
Yeah, his name was Bob Gregg, a former Marine who it's a different time. I moved, my parents divorced when I was young, and they remarried and divorced. I moved around a lot. I went to about 8 schools in 9 years, and the final time I moved was 8th grade, and my mom and dad decided to move me to the school I went to middle of my 8th grade year, just for me to finally have one place to go. And it was because of Bob Gregg. They wanted me to play for him, and it had everything to do with not just they were winning. It was just, he was kind of a tyrant, just a old school kind of picture Bobby Knight, Bo Schembechler, General Patton, Vince Lombardi. It was just his way. And he just taught us things that were just so valuable at the time. It was dreadful to go through. We won a lot of games. He's a Hall of Fame coach, but that's not why people's hearts are so heavy today and over the weekend. It's because we're all, the guys that played for him and the people that knew him well are just reminiscing about what he did for us, you know. And the worst year of my life was my sophomore year at high school. I used to literally go to bed staring at the ceiling in my bedroom, dreading getting up at 5 in the morning to have to go work out when it was still dark outside. No one did this back in 1986. He was way ahead of his time. And he took teams that were very average as far as athletic ability and skill and turned them into complete robots that felt that they could beat anybody because of the sacrifice and the commitment and the things that we went through. And, you know, you didn't realize at the time what a game changer it was, but he created a foundation that we all use the rest of our lives. Yep. And anything that we got ourselves involved with, whether it was, you know, going to college, whether it was some of the guys went into the military, whether it was getting married, whether it was having kids, whether it was where you worked, your employment, all the principles that you learned from this coach is what you use, you know, every day in life. I saw Boys of Fall document on that Kenny Chesney did. Yeah. And a lot of the former players that played for Bill Parcells were talking about the same thing that I'm talking about right now. And yeah, he's tough to play for and maybe tough to work for, but what you learn when you're away from that coach is what's invaluable. And so for me, Bob Gregg was a game changer. For me, my dad, my mom, they did a great job of raising me, even though they were divorced. They both did what they could in their own unique way. But not having him and how tough he was, I thought my maximum effort was here. I thought that's all I have. Mentally, physically, this is all I have. And he taught me, oh, no. You can go to a whole different level. You just don't realize it yet. And to go from here, you know, that where you think you can go, to where you're shown you can actually go, that right there, that difference is a game changer for people mentally and physically. And he taught me that. So yeah, I'm indebted to him for the rest of my life. And and just reminiscing quite a bit over the last 24, 48 hours, thinking about him and his life and what he meant to so many kids that, that played for him.
You know, we take this moment, I mean, really to we know a lot of people listen to this, but to thank all of the high school coaches and youth league coaches that have done so much. I mean, my high school coach, ironically enough, is Tim Beck. He's the offensive coordinator at NC State. And the stuff that he taught us, like you, when you're taught at a formidable age that you need to be accountable for other people than yourself, that stays, that sticks. That's not a, and so for there's coaches out there listening, youth coaches, high school coaches, whatever level of coach you are, thank you. Because the impact that you have on young people's lives, that stays. That's an indelible moment that, you know, we've all taken with us. And so, Kirk, thank you for sharing that story with us.
Let me just add, in this world of cancel culture, that if this coach coached today, Bob Gregg coached today, or if Bobby Knight coached today, or if Bo Schembechler coached today, there would be a strong contingent that would want to cancel a coach that coached the way Bob Gregg did. In fact, when he moved to my high school in the mid to late 70s, there were parents even in that era, because he was asking these players to do things that was unthinkable, the workload and the things that he asked and the sacrifice he made them make. There were many parents that called the school. I've talked with the principal years later about the calls he would take from parents saying, "You got to get rid of that coach. He's no good. I don't care that he's winning games. He's not good for these kids." And I'm just saying that in the world today, look at me right now. I'm not saying I'm a perfect person by any stretch of the imagination, but I am saying I will outwork anybody out there, and I'll do everything I can to try to do it the right way. And I learned these things from him. So maybe his style didn't always, maybe it wasn't checking every box. Maybe he didn't always do everything the way you're supposed to do things today. But man, do we ever need leaders today like Bob Gregg? You know, boy, do we as a country need guys like Nick Saban and Bob Gregg, who may ruffle some feathers, may frustrate you, may say, "I can't believe he's doing that. What is he doing? That's not fair. He shouldn't be doing it that way." And yet, look at the difference that coaches like that can make in people's lives. And I echo your sentiments on the coaches that are out there, not the bullies. I put a video up the other week.
Oh, it's disgusting.
Guy,
yeah.
A guy thinks he's doing a good job coaching. It's almost like child abuse. That there's a big difference between being knowledgeable and understanding and being tough. And I'm all about being tough and learning from some tough experiences, but not being abusive. That's ridiculous. You know, some of the things that you see on Friday Night Tikes and some of the asinine things that these quote unquote coaches think that they're doing. That's not what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a guy that makes you do things and he's very tough on you because he knows you can raise your bar up a little bit. So I echo what you're saying. All the coaches that are out there doing it the right way, being demanding, being tough, making these kids realize to buy into team. And so it's more about the team than your own agenda. I applaud them and thank them for everything they're doing to change lives, not just win football games, but change lives.
I find it a natural segue because I remember, this may have been a few weeks ago now, that Mario Cristobal came under some video fire for yelling at a player on the sideline, really yelling at him for the player making a dumb mistake. Yeah. And I forget the player's name, but the player stood there, looked at him and said, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir." Mario Cristobal, I think, is one of those coaches that's going to demand the ultimate level of competition, respect, and accountability. And you see it in his teams, and you saw it again on Saturday against UCLA. They had to battle back. UCLA battled back. They had that game won. And when you find teams that respond to adversity, like Oregon did on Saturday, Kirk, that's a great example of a coach who, look, his style may not be for everybody, but his team seems to respond and they got another win.
That was an incredible game. You're right. That you talk about being backed into a corner. You know, they were booed the last time they played against Cal, week before on a Friday night. Anthony Brown specifically was booed at home. And now they go on the road. the next game and they're down in the blink of an eye. They're on the road and they're down big 14-0 in the first quarter. And, you know, they have, let's be honest, Oregon started the year like this. They're going up. You know, they are. They beat Ohio State. They're one of the trendy teams. They fought through some adversity, some injuries. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau was a guy that wasn't able to play most of the early part of the year. They had a lot of injuries. They've been hit by injuries more than anybody. Then they lose to Stanford, kind of a controversial loss. And then they play Cal, and it's like, uh-oh, it's going down. Now they're down 14-0 to UCLA. It's like, I told you, they're not – that's what I think it felt like. People are like, I told you they're not that good. So all that momentum's going against them. And then you talk about what they pride themselves in, which is just keep going. In fact, Holly Rowe asked Mario right before the game, what's the key? What do you got to do? He said, listen, there's going to be some highs. There's going to be some lows. All I'm telling my guys to do, just keep swinging. Just keep swinging. How perfect of an interview was that before the game? Because it could not have been – I mean, UCLA takes the ball. They go right down the field, 12 plays, like 85 yards, touchdown. And then they're down 14. And as he said, just keep swinging. Anthony Brown kind of settled into the game. The quarterback starts making some plays. Then they go up big. Now they're up 34-17. And then here comes Chip Kelly's team that has resiliency. They get back to 34-31. And then DTR, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, goes down with an injury at the critical point in the game where they're driving to, at the very least, tie the game 34-34, maybe take the lead, maybe go on to win it the way he was throwing. That kid is an amazing player and tough as nails. And he goes out. And at that point, I thought, you know, what's going to happen? And Ethan Garbers came in and did a pretty good job. He converted a fourth down, which to me was pretty impressive. And then, you know, he ends up throwing the Ethan Garbers ends up throwing that interception. And it was just one of those. I thought he kind of telegraphed it a little bit, kind of showed it, and DJ James stepped in front of it. But an epic game. Good for the Pac-12, by the way. Stepping, so much fun to have him in that big a stage, that big window, 3:30 national stage. And they showed America Pac-12 can play some good football, and that was a heck of a competitive game.
Ethan Garbers, brother of Chase Garbers at Cal, had us believing there for a second, and Oregon gets the win. So I'm actually going to thank Mario Cristobal, because I want to make that – let's make that the theme of today's podcast, keep swinging. And Oklahoma – I mean, Oklahoma had to keep swinging. I mean, they slept in the first half. Absolutely. They weren't even there. And they had to keep swinging in the second half. And wouldn't you know it, we had more Caleb Williams magic and people. I mean, I was arguing with Galloway all day Saturday about, well, Oklahoma needs to show me this. Oklahoma, well, look, Oklahoma, yeah, they should have pummeled Kansas. Kansas kept swinging. But Caleb and Oklahoma in the second half, they won by 12. They did what they needed to do. One of the headiest plays I've ever seen in college football. Forget that he's a true freshman on that fourth down when Caleb stole the ball from Kennedy Brooks. Look, they won by 12. Was it pretty? No. But Oklahoma kept swinging and got the win.
Man, I you know, that's my precursor for what do I love about this game is this game. Yeah. You know, the Illinois game is the same way against Penn State. You know, it's every Saturday. You have no idea where it's going to happen. And I'm telling you this for fans that don't realize it, and I'm not making an excuse for Oklahoma, but when you go on the road and you've been playing in big games like OU Texas at the state fair, and you've been playing all these games at prime time, big audiences, big buzz, big energy. And then you go to Lawrence, Kansas for an 11 a.m. kick. I'm telling you, you cannot. Anybody who's played the game will tell you this. When you play in these big stages, and then you go, it's nothing against Kansas and 11 a.m. kick. I'm just being honest. It's the reality of, for Ohio State, it was when we would go to Evanston, if it was an early kick, had the same kind of buzz. This would be pre-Pat Fitzgerald. It just was kind of a half-empty stadium. It felt like a spring game. You kind of lost, it's human nature. You just kind of jog out on the field. Instead of running out on the field ready to go, you just kind of jog out on the field. That's why these coaches try to compete against a faceless opponent. We're going against perfection. Don't worry if we're playing Texas or Kansas were the same team every week. That's what you strive for. And this is the reason why you strive for that, because if you let emotions dictate how you're going to play, you're going to get played great when you're playing a big time opponent on big TVs, you know, big stage, and here we go. And then you're going to come down. And that's, I feel like that's what Oklahoma did. I thought Kansas was very well prepared, but let's be honest. If OU showed up in a bad mood, hair on fire, the way they did against Texas or the way they did against West Virginia or anybody you want to mention, then it would be probably a different feel. But yep. Kansas took advantage of a flat Oklahoma team, and they were executing. They're up. And all of us, including you and Joey, are like, all right, when's the fuse going to be lit?
Yep.
But it wouldn't get lit. I mean, I was like,
there wasn't.
I mean, I'm like, come on, come on. And to Kansas's credit, the longer the game went on, the more confident really they became. And even when OU took the lead, it was like, they didn't go away. So, I mean, I was excited to see Kansas is heading in a really good direction, you know, with Lance Leipold with what he's doing. But play of the day, maybe Caleb Williams Kennedy Brooks. I mean, he threw some touchdowns. He made some great plays throughout the day, but the awareness to yank that ball and get the first down save the game for the Sooners.
And save the season. I mean, you talk about the anatomy of an upset. There are certain things that require to happen for the anatomy of an upset. You just went through all of them. And the fact that Oklahoma was able to steal that, because they were ripe to get got, and they didn't, and they remained, they lived to play another undefeated day. Same can't be said for Oklahoma State. Guess who kept swinging?
By the way, Jason Bean, the quarterback.
Oh, Bean was slinging it.
From Kansas, he played his butt off, man. Yeah. Throwing it, running it. He left his heart out there, man. He played really, really well. And like I said, just when you thought that OU kind of settled in, they took the lead. They started really pull away. I think at one point, you know, they scored on that fourth down play with about 8 minutes to go.
40-yard run.
Yeah. Caleb Williams gets out. You're like, okay. Well, they had the scare, but they just kept coming. And Bean was behind the whole attitude and effort and performance. So I'm not saying that Kansas wasn't responsible for some of it. I'm just saying that I think OU being flat had a lot to do with it, but I definitely want to give Jason Bean his credit. And it's fun to see. I'd love to see Kansas have a heartbeat and get things going. They used to be a great program back in like 07, 08.
Mangino
and Todd Reesing, and they had some good teams. So I'd love to see them get it going.
I was fortunate enough, just a random connection with Lance Leipold, called a couple of Buffalo games in midweek action a few years ago. That guy will build a program. I mean, he's all substance, no sizzle. And I think you're right. I think Kansas can get back to where they think that they should be in the Big 12. The theme, keep swinging here on the Monday podcast, Iowa State. I mean, Iowa State kept swinging, man. Like every year we buy into Matt Campbell and Breece Hall, Brock Purdy, Xavier Hutchinson, the Titan. This is the year they do what they do, which is underwhelm in the beginning part of the season. They sit now 3-1 in the Big 12. They beat Oklahoma State 24-21. Here they are, Kirk, right where we thought they'd be, maybe too little too late, but they can win this conference.
They can. They can. And you and I have said for the last few weeks they're going to get somebody. I thought it was almost so obvious. I mean, they're a touchdown favorite against an undefeated Oklahoma State team. I almost felt it was so obvious that Oklahoma State was going to kind of come in with kind of a chip on their shoulder and feel slighted and play well and win the game. I thought they'd go in, and they looked like they were going to be in a spot to do that. First half, they played lights out. The game was really exactly the way Mike Gundy would want it to go. But eventually, Brock Purdy, this is why his fans love him. He took care of the football, didn't turn it over. Xavier Hutchinson, huge day with what he was able to do. When you look at this conference, Oklahoma has survived. Yep. Right? I mean, they've been able to get through this undefeated, but they've yet to play any of the big boys that are sitting out there, whether it's Iowa State that's coming up, Baylor that's coming up, Oklahoma State, Bedlam at the end of the year. So Oklahoma's going to get their chance. Right now, I think there are a lot of people, even myself, you know, when you try to put your top four together, like who's most deserving of being up there, you know, you have obviously you have Georgia, you got Cincinnati, you have Ohio State, Alabama, you have Oklahoma, whoever, Michigan, teams like that. And Oklahoma just kind of feels like, you know, the whole Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler thing went on. They've had to find ways to win some games that what hasn't always been pretty, but they're 8-0. They are 8-0. And the big part of their schedule is coming up. They've got Baylor in a few weeks at Waco. They've got Iowa State at home. And then they go to Stillwater. So if they win those games and they win the Big 12 championship, there's no issue at all for Oklahoma. They control their own destiny, obviously. But they slip up one time. How messy could that Big 12 be? Because all four of those teams right now, Iowa State, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma, obviously, are all sitting there thinking they got a shot to win this conference.
It's going to be beautifully chaotic, and that's why I love when people get all fired up when you slide someone in the rankings and you say this about the team. It's like, well, take a knee. They're all playing. This is a round robin, just like the Big Ten East. Well, you can say whatever you want about Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State. It's all going to be settled in the next month.
It's a very fluid situation,
right?
From one week to the next, you know, and if Cincinnati is the one team of all those teams that to me needs help.
Yep.
Because if Alabama were to run the table and beat Georgia, Cincinnati is going to be on the outside looking in. I'm not saying it's deserving, and how they play is going to, you know, you can look at their schedule. Hey, we beat Notre Dame. They need Notre Dame to keep winning. We beat Indiana. That one's not looking as good. But I'm pro Cincinnati. I love to see them up there. I'm just telling you, the committee comes out, I think, starting, what, November 2nd?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Not tomorrow, but the next week. And Georgia's obviously out there. Cincinnati, as we sit here right now. But if Bama were to win out, let's just say Bama wins out,
mm-hmm.
Georgia and Alabama are both going to be in.
Yep.
If Ohio State or Michigan State were to win out, they're going to be in.
Yep.
If Oklahoma were to win out, they're going to be in. I mean, hell, if Oregon out of the Pac-12 with one loss is going to win, it potentially went out, they might have a strong case as well. So if you're Cincinnati, it looks great right now and you're doing all you can, but the committee at the end of the day, the reason the group of five sometimes loses out is because the schedule and how many top 25 teams did you beat and who'd you beat and where'd you beat them. And early in the year, we were like, hey, man, they're going to Indiana. What a great opportunity. They're going to Notre Dame. What a great opportunity. And now it's down to, well, they beat Notre Dame at South Bend. That's what they have right now. Yep. And they have SMU coming up. So they've got those two games. But these other teams are playing behemoths, you know. So, well, they're the one team right now up in the top six that's going to me, need some help.
Yeah, and it doesn't make it right, but you have to beat Navy by more than 27-20 at this stage of the season, because I think November 20th is the SMU game. They could get Houston. If Houston keeps winning, they could get them in the American. But the world that they live in, it's BCS all over again. It's style points. I mean, you got to have them.
And the Navy game, to me, I mean, I'm not going to give them a pass. Navy's not having a great year. They're 1-6, but they do run a funky offense. You know, Cincinnati had done what they're supposed to do to the teams that they play. They're heavily favored over Temple. They blew Temple out. Heavily favored over UCF. They blew UCF out. You know, Navy to me is a little bit of an outlier because of what Coach Ken does, the system that they run. And even though they're not great, they're still tough and they've played their hearts out, you know, that day. But let's see what Cincinnati does. I'd love to see them get in personally. I'd love to see this team. It's a veteran team, the same team that went toe to toe with Georgia last year in the Sugar Bowl. Yep. Basically, the entire team is back. They don't have to apologize for anything. I'm just saying the reality of the world we live in, they need Alabama to lose. If Georgia beats Alabama, Cincinnati should be going crazy that the Crimson Tide has two losses and that they're out. I'm telling you, Bama has one and Georgia has one. That's going to be a bad deal for Cincinnati. How about Alabama, by the way?
Oh,
yeah. I know you're doing score updates all day. I got back from the Rose Bowl, and I'm flipping on Ohio State. I'm flipping around Notre Dame. I'm like, oh, yeah, Tennessee, Alabama. I flipped that over. I'm, whoa, whoa, what? What? What's going on here? It was like, I don't know what. It was 14-7 at one point. Yeah, the Vols were looking good. And
Tennessee was going score for score with them.
Yeah. What was up with that? Alabama had some bust in coverage again and not looking real sharp.
Alabama needs to be careful. Alabama lives just too dangerously enough where that'll cost them against LSU. That'll cost them against Auburn. That'll cost them against one of these teams late in the season. Because what did we say about Alabama? Could be an all-time defense for Nick Saban. And to this point, we just haven't seen it. They tied it. It was Tennessee was up 14-7. Alabama ties at 14. Then they go up 21-14, similar to against A&M. We're like, okay, here we go. Alabama's going to start pulling away. Tennessee gets it to 21-17. I mean, they were always there in the fight. And this isn't to say that Alabama needs to run away with everything every week, because Tennessee's a good football team under Josh Heupel. They're growing in front of our eyes. But
yeah,
Alabama lives just dangerously enough to where they do that against someone in a game that matters. Can you imagine how hard LSU will be playing for Coach O, we think, in his final game against Alabama? Alabama's just scary enough to make you wonder if they could get beat again.
Well, the defense has been a mystery because they, you know, they played so well late last year. And to me, when he has veterans at the second and third level, that defense is so devastating because they're so complicated and they do so much that years that they don't have experience, you have those busts in coverage where there's confusion. Again, they're not playing two coverages. They're playing like an NFL defense. Right. So it requires hand signals, everybody on the same page. Teams show up with a tackle over, trips into the format, into the boundary. They motion out. I mean, things are going to up-tempo offense. It's the world today is hard to be on defense. And when you do a lot, it's really hard. So it requires linebackers and the dime and the money safety. Everybody's communicating real fast. So they're trips for trips. Oh, no, motion. You know, and everybody's just dialed in. Well, right now, it's almost like not all the time, but just you're used to them being like boom, boom, boom.
Right.
And right now they get certain looks and it's just not clicking the way you would expect it to click with a veteran group. In fact, this was an issue last year for this defense after the first 3, 4, 5 weeks. And it was almost just they had like that aha moment.
Yep.
And all of a sudden they started playing. Oh my gosh, they got it. They're playing well. They're communicating. And all those guys are back. All of those guys are back this year. And so you would expect zero busts, zero breakdowns, everybody locked in. And it's just not been the case. So I don't know, you know, if you look at LSU, let's be honest. I mean, they might play hard, but they're an uppercut in the first round away from being like, it's a weird year for them. And then you got forget about New Mexico State. You got Arkansas at home. I don't think they throw the ball well enough to be a real threat. And then you got to go to Jordan-Hare, which could be a little bit sneaky. Auburn sitting there at 5-2, and Brian Harsin. Now he and Mike Bobo. That's the game where you can draw up ball plays with a veteran quarterback. And you realize, okay, what's the kryptonite to Nick Saban's defense? The kryptonite is multiple formations, up-tempo, return to tight ends, motion to go to trips now into the boundary, bring them back over here, make them have to think, now we got a quarterback that can run and throw up to, I mean, it's the formula to move the ball and hit some explosives. So that's down the road. Plus it's a rivalry game, but they definitely have the offense and the mind, with Harsin and Bobo and Bo Nix to at least make it tough on Bama. But other than that, I just don't know if they play anybody else that can expose that concern in that Bama defense right now.
While we're staying in the SEC, let's peek our heads to week 9 because Georgia coming off the bye week, Florida as well. They'll go play in Jacksonville for their annual game. Look, at the beginning of the season, I thought, well, this could decide the East. I don't see anybody messing with Georgia right now. And I certainly, based on what we've seen out of Florida, this could be their fourth loss of the season already, which would be stunning to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right there with you. I think we're just kind of, we're all trained that Dan Mullen is just going to find a way to be a great football team after the way they played week three against Alabama. They came storming back. I think it was 31-29. They showed enough in that game, I think, for everybody to think this is that team. You know, he's got a very different way of attacking. They lost everybody off that offense, but man, Emory Jones is playing well. They're running the ball, QB run. They're dangerous. Then they go to Lexington and lose. And then they lose to LSU.
Yep.
I mean, both those games were by a touchdown. They could have won them both. It's not like they're just terrible. It's just they got off track. And their defense shocked me in the way they played against LSU. So now you get to bye, which could help them. I will never say, I'll never look at Dan Mullen team and say, well, they didn't play well against LSU. They lost in Kentucky, so Georgia's going to kill them. I just, 2 weeks to get ready, running quarterback. Now, they're going to have to make some plays. I mean, yes. You have no shot to be a running quarterback and be a threat against this defense. You're not running the ball against Georgia. Repeat, you are not running the ball against Georgia. So you can try to sprinkle it in, but you are going to have to hit some explosives in the pass game. Can you do that with these, you know, with this quarterback and with these receivers? We'll see. But 2 weeks to get ready. Dan Mullen, a smart guy. Yeah. They'll come up with some stuff. End of the day, you got to go out and execute, right? And will that be good enough? A lot of emotion in a rivalry game. Florida desperately needs to compete and not lay an egg when they go up against the best team in the country in Georgia.
And here's what I'll say, and we'll move on to the Big Ten. In this year of college football, I'm not ready to just discount anyone, any week, no. Any game, because we've seen so much weird that this would fall right in line with weird. And yep. So it's always a good game. It's always a good rivalry. Things happen. So look forward to that one in Jacksonville. Now to the Big Ten. As we make our push through the Power Five, before we get into the obvious teams, can I just point out of nowhere, PJ Fleck in Minnesota are 5-2.
Yep.
When did that, it seems like we were all just kind of asleep on row the boat.
Well, they lost to Bowling Green, and this is after they lost their two top running backs.
Right. I mean,
Muhammad Ibrahim is one of the elite backs in the country. He goes out against Ohio State. Trey Pott steps in, he's doing a great job, but then he goes down. You're thinking, do they have any more scholarship? Right. I mean, this is a team that's built on the run game. They got anybody left that can run the ball? And man. Irving and Kai Thomas step in there last week, both went over 100 yards. You're dead on. I'm glad you brought them up because it's easy to go to what Ohio State, Michigan, and some of these other teams are doing. But to watch Minnesota sit there at 5-2, they've won three in a row since they lost that game against Bowling Green, and they put themselves right in a spot. I mean, all of a sudden you start to think about, could the Minnesota-Iowa game dictate who's going to go to Indianapolis and play in the Big Ten championship game? And as we sit here right now, that's what it looks like. They're both sitting there atop of the division in the Big Ten West, and they play each other. What is it coming up like November 13th, I think?
Yeah, so, a few weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks. That's going to be a heck of a game. And right now, I'm glad you gave PJ Fleck some credit because they definitely deserve it, not just for being 5-2.
Sure.
But for losing the people that they've lost at the positions they've lost them and still be sitting there running the football and staying to their brand and their identity. I was impressed last week. That was a solid win.
Sometimes you just get handed a show theme. Minnesota keep swinging. They kept swinging, and here they are 5-2.
Keep rowing.
Now they keep rowing. They're not going to swing. They're going to row it. They're going to get in the canoe, and they're going to row. And the coaching theme that we started the show off with, how about Brett Bielema? Gets criticized for what he says in the media. And some people didn't like that approach. Why? Because as you mentioned earlier, this culture we live in, of you just don't speak your mind if it's against what you think. Like, let's just all hug and everything's going to be great. What did he do? Called out his team. Said, I don't have guys on this roster. They're going to fight. Anyone who knows the sport and covers the sport understands that there are times where coaches will speak to their team through the media. That's exactly what Brett Bielema did. And if you think for a second that didn't work, go watch what they did Saturday. It is obvious he has his players' respect, because if they were going to quit on him, they'd have done it this week. And what did they do? They took it to 9 overtimes with an asterisk because the new rule, it wasn't really 9 overtimes. But they go and upset with a 7th-ranked team in the country. That says to me that Bielema has the ear of his guys that says, you know what? If you don't perform to the standard with which I expect, you're going to get called out for it. Show me different. And they did.
Well, you nailed it. I don't even really have to add anything to it. He did come out and question his team. He's like, basically, this is who they recruited. I guess this is what I got. I guess this is what I got to work with. You know, until we recruit better players, this is what we got. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially kind of what he said. And there was an uproar, but man, can you believe he's calling out his team like that? And Brett Bielema is a smart guy, man. He knows how to relate to this generation. He knows how to touch buttons. And he, you know, I'm not saying that's the reason they won, but the bottom line is, to your point, they definitely didn't quit. They definitely played more inspired than they had maybe going all the way back to their opener against Nebraska. And so, to their credit, they won. And then on the opposite end of that, Penn State. Oh. I know you have Ohio State the next week. You're coming off a bye after the loss at Iowa City, which was a heartbreaking loss. And Sean Clifford gets banged up in that game. He plays in this game. They looked like a shadow of themselves from what we have seen.
Yeah.
And you can't just put it all on, well, Clifford's hurt and they had Ohio State, that they're at home against Illinois. Just a shocking, shocking game. So great for Illinois. Back to the drawing board in a hurry.
Yep.
For Penn State, because here comes Ryan Day and Ohio State and C.J. Stroud and Trevion Henderson and all these receivers, Jeremy Ruckert, maybe the best line in the country. And I'm not trying to say give Ohio State the Big Ten championship already, but some teams get better every week, some teams get worse. Ohio State is a team, without a doubt, that keeps getting better. The quarterback is playing with incredible confidence. He's got a smile on his face. And I don't think that's a cocky smile. I just think that that's a, I got it. I got this.
Yep.
You know, and he's not predetermining where to go with the ball. He's reading it. He's got so many options. He's letting the defense dictate based on their coverage, where the matchup is or where the hole in the zone is, run versus pass, get it to Trevion Henderson, let the line do their thing. God, Ryan Day's offense is so much fun to watch when he's got a quarterback that feels good with the attack and how to go after a defense. And their defense, they gave up the touchdown early when Tuttle was in. And I don't know, I've always said to you last week, they're as good defensively as their defensive line. And their defensive line looks like it's really starting to grow up. And the linebackers are playing better. Man, we'll find out this week against Penn State. But the Buckeyes are starting to send a message to me that they're one of the best teams in the country.
I think they're the second best team in the country based on what we've seen over the last month. And you mentioned the C.J. Stroud smile. It's almost as if he understands that he now speaks a foreign language fluently. He's right. Like, I got it. Like, I speak this language fluently. I can
That's
go
a good way of saying it.
Yeah. I can go into any diner in the world and speak this language, and I've got it in hand. And Michigan, Michigan State, Michigan did their part, getting by Northwestern 33-7. Sparty was on the bye week. I say this about Michigan State. I still don't really know who they are. I like their trio of Peyton Thorne, Kenneth Walker, Jalen Naylor. I think Michigan will smack you in the mouth. I think this will be a really, really good game. And if I'm not mistaken, that's where you'll take the bus this week for college game day. And here we go. Round robin's here. We're going to learn quickly right now this week who is who in this game.
Yep. Yeah, this is what it's all about. You know, the rivalry and the history there between Michigan and Michigan State is very unique. You know, everybody always talks because of the Mike Hart comment, big brother, little brother, and little brother there for a while has definitely had the upper hand. But this Michigan team, we've been saying all year that they seem to have an aura about them, a confidence about them, and no better way to prove to America that it is what it is than to go into East Lansing in a rivalry game on a huge stage and go out and play efficient football. That's what they've been doing all year. We talked last Saturday, okay, what does Ohio State need to do to make a stretch run? What does Michigan State need to do? What does Penn State need to do? What does Michigan need to do? When we got to Michigan, my comment was, they just need to play somebody. Like, don't change anything. Like, right. They're playing. They don't need to do anything. Just they need an opportunity. And the opportunity was not last Saturday at home against Northwestern. The opportunity is this Saturday in East Lansing when they see that green and white uniform across the other side of the line of scrimmage. This is where we truly find out if Michigan is as good as they appear to be. And then you got Michigan State, who's like, what about us? You know, we're the surprise of the entire country. And they are. And so that's what makes this game. You know, what do you love about college football? I love this weekend. I love a rivalry game. I love where both teams are up in the top 10. One is a complete surprise in Michigan State with all the transfer portals. And the other one is a traditional power Michigan, who's somewhat of a surprise. But this is the week, you know, we either go Michigan is legit, or we go, man, Michigan was like this a couple years ago and they finished, you know, that's what we learn this weekend. And we also find out about Cade McNamara, because he's going to have to take care of the football the way he has all year, but he's going to have to make some plays. I think he's capable of doing it. He's going to have to make some plays, especially early downs. Michigan State's going to be like, you know what? Make that kid McNamara, make him beat us. They're not running the ball with Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins. They're not running the ball. We're loading up. Let's see if this kid can beat us throwing. That's what it's going to be. So can he make the throws to win the game for Michigan? I think it'll be the whole story of the game.
So you hit a perfect segue there. Let's do it for this week. Time now for Why We Love the Sport.
That's why we love the sport.
The reason I love the sport this weekend.
This is why I love this sport.
All right, Kirk, lead us off. Why do you love the sport this week? You kind of touched on it there a minute ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back to last weekend, and it's a Ric Flair. I think it was Ric Flair quote. You know, just when you think you have all the answers, I change the questions. I don't know if that was Rowdy Roddy Piper maybe that said that. That to me is why I love this sport, and we got more reminders of that this past weekend. You know, you had Penn State in an easy game against Brett Bielema in Illinois. Everybody just put it down before the game started. Check, Penn State wins. They're off to Columbus next week. We really find out how good Penn State and Ohio State are. Wrong. Illinois showed up, and they were – now, forget the nine over. That new rule is terrible. They need garbage to do away with it. Awful. But the point is, Illinois wrecked the party. You know, they came in and kind of shocked the world. And the same thing, Kansas didn't get it done, but how many people in America either checked their phone – or they flipped on a game and they saw that Kansas was leading, not early like first quarter, but like second quarter, third quarter. I mean, Kansas is here to play. Oklahoma is on the ropes. And who would have ever imagined that before that game started with Caleb Williams and all the momentum that the Sooners were creating with him at quarterback? And they go to Lawrence, Kansas, and they're holding on for dear life. In fact, Caleb Williams had to rip the ball away from Kennedy Brooks, which is like something you never see in the sport, just to convert on a fourth down to ice the game. So those games, and there are more to come in these next 5 or 6 weeks where you have no idea where they're going to come, and they're going to be out there every week.
I love that. And you're right. You just don't know. And the reason I love the sport this weekend, I love the sport because it seems now we've gone into this, go get the money, go to the NFL, go get yours. You know who stayed and got his? Kenny Pickett, quarterback Pitt. He could have gone to the NFL. Seems like he's been at Pitt for a decade. Stays put, wants to come back and prove to the country that Pitt's a legitimate program. What do? They beat Clemson. They beat Dabo. They get over that hump. I love the sport because Kenny Pickett bet on himself and his team. He should be considered in the Heisman Trophy race. He should be considered a first-round NFL draft pick. And I want Pitt. I want to shake them for losing to Western Michigan, but I want them to keep winning because I want people to see that if you do stay and you bet on yourself and you bet on your team, you can have a season for the ages. And I love what Pitt's doing right now.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. We're headed to a Pitt Wake Forest ACC championship game. How about
let's
that?
Let's go. Let's get weird. Throw me Dave Clawson and Pat Narduzzi and let's sling it around the yard in Charlotte.
Yeah, that would be wild, man. Both those quarterbacks, like you said, having monster years.
Yeah, Sam Hartman, give him credit. I mean, there's so many. We could do a podcast on good stories in college football because it's been that kind of season. So here we go, Kirk. I believe I haven't looked. Wait a second. I'm looking at the calendar as we speak because I don't even know what day it is. Okay, so we get one more Saturday in October. Final Saturday in October. Then we move to November, the month you remember, as we forge on here at the ESPN College Football Podcast. Herbie, always a pleasure. Monday's my favorite day of the week. Looking forward to doing it again with you soon.
All right, buddy. Have a great week.